Hi, James Lewis here, and you're listening to the Renew Democracy Initiative audio newsletter. This week in democracy, is Germany's appeasement of Russia over? As Angela Merkel steps down from her role as Chancellor of Germany, a new coalition government is coming in. While most attention is focused towards the new Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, the appointment of Annalena Baerbock to Foreign Minister might make the biggest difference to European security. After that, why are so many candidates in Latin American elections extremists? November featured a whirlwind of elections across Latin America, and in most cases, there were popular extremist candidates whose interests in radical change seemed greater than their faith in democracy. How does democracy's failure to improve people's everyday lives undermine it? Here's why you should care. As more than 100,000 Russian troops mobilized on the border with Ukraine, the EU's most influential country hammered out the final details in a two-month-long negotiation to form a new government. The German federal elections were held in September, and the victorious parties have divided government posts among themselves based on their relative vote totals. Thus far, the narrow defeat of Merkel's center-right party to the center-left Social Democrats has garnered the most attention, as their candidate for chancellor, Olaf Scholz, will now succeed Merkel. But with Russia threatening another invasion of Ukraine, Germany's new foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, might be the key to predicting Germany's response. Compared to the subdued policies of the Merkel government, Baerbock seems poised to push back. So how has Germany appeased Russia? Well, under Merkel, the German government consistently ignored security concerns related to making deals with Russian businesses, believing that greater interdependence would draw Russia closer into the European fold. It's part of a long-held German strategy which translates to change through rapprochement, and it's predicated on the belief that Kremlin foreign influence campaigns don't connect to business deals. Unfortunately, it's entirely misguided. There's no such thing as a major independent corporation in Russia. Industries are dominated by oligarchs who are dependent on and loyal to Putin. Business is politics, and international businesses are as central to Russia's foreign policy as controlling the media or fielding an army. The German government has proven uniquely stubborn in acknowledging this and continues to walk into bad deals with Russia that undermine all of Europe's security. The latest is Nord Stream 2, a nearly completed natural gas pipeline that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken described as a Russian geopolitical project intended to divide Europe and weaken European energy security. So how could Baerbock change German foreign policy? Well, unlike the current German leadership, Baerbock isn't falling for Russia's propaganda. While campaigning for chancellor, she opposed the completion of Nord Stream 2, describing it as a treacherous plan and reiterating, "We can't allow ourselves to be blackmailed." Compared to Merkel's steadfast commitment to ever greater entrenchment into long-term energy partnerships with Russia, Baerbock's position is revolutionary, and she doesn't stop there. Baerbock is poised to confront the rising belligerence of the Chinese dictatorship directly. She's called for restrictions on products linked to forced labor in Xinjiang and connects Russia and China in a global power struggle between free and oppressive societies. In her words, "We are in a systemic rivalry with authoritarian regimes and must make every effort to defend the international rules-based order." Acknowledging the potential significance of Baerbock's appointment, China's propaganda outlet, The Global Times, ran a piece this past Monday warning about Baerbock and predicting a transition period of more frictions, while declaring that the distance between the hearts of China and Germany is already too wide. Still, Baerbock seems to be taking a measured approach. She's acknowledged that China will continue to be a major German trading partner, but recommends a policy of dialogue and toughness. Compared to the outdated policy of change through rapprochement, it would be a welcome change. With Russia once again appearing to threaten Ukraine with invasion, there could hardly be a more important moment for Germany to pivot toward taking a harder line on Russian aggression. Their business partnerships are actively undermining European security, while their leadership could bolster it. Nevertheless, only time will tell if Baerbock can really trigger a shift in German foreign policy. During Merkel's tenure, the foreign ministry was stripped of much of its power as the chancellery started to dictate foreign policy directly. It will take a crisis for us to find out if Baerbock's appointment is truly a turning point. And unfortunately, we might not have to wait very long. Returning to our other story this week, why are there so many extremist candidates in Latin American elections? From Chile to Mexico, 2021 has been filled with major elections across Latin America. While the voters have weighed in on referendums, filled seats for legislatures, and selected heads of state, the elections have shared a key characteristic. Extremism tends to be on the ballot, and it often does very well. Latin America is hardly the only region struggling with extremism in democratic elections, but it does seem to be more inescapable. In Peru's presidential election in June, voters chose between the daughter of an imprisoned former dictator who led death squads against his citizens, and a socialist who wanted to rewrite the Constitution, threatened to dissolve Congress, and hoped to nationalize industry. The socialist, Pedro Castillo, is now the president of Peru. Just this past month, elections were held in Chile, Honduras, Argentina, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. In Chile, José Antonio Kast, a far-right candidate, finished on top with 28% of the vote, sending him into a runoff election with his leftist opponent, Gabriel Boric. Kast's commitment to democracy is dubious, and, leaning into anti-immigrant nativism, he's promised to dig a trench to keep migrants out. Last year, voters approved a referendum to hold a constitutional convention, so no matter who wins, Chile is bound for radical change. In Honduras, far-left candidate Xiomara Castro won the presidency last week and promised to rewrite Honduras' 1982 constitution immediately after taking power. She's the wife of former President Manuel Zelaya, who also tried to change the constitution before being deposed in a widely condemned military coup. In Venezuela and Nicaragua, the entrenched dictatorships of Nicolas Maduro and Daniel Ortega outlawed any potential for real elections. But the elections still serve as powerful reminders of why elections matter in the first place. Venezuela and Nicaragua were both recently democracies, and the current dictatorships were only able to take power because they were voted in democratically. Any election can be a democracy's last, and candidates like these seem intent on making it that way. So why is extremism so appealing? As a cascade of crises strike Latin American countries, voters are increasingly demanding radical responses. In Peru, the moderate establishment parties floundered as voters railed against rising inequality and massive levels of corruption that persisted over decades. Honduras struggles through uncontrolled violence and economic ruin, and Chilean politics is being destabilized by the public's backlash to Venezuelan migrants, among other crises. Venezuelan migrants are only arriving, of course, because 23 years ago the public gambled on a young Hugo Chavez to rewrite the Constitution and cure long unaddressed issues, ultimately leading to the destruction of the state. Moderation hasn't offered a cure to these massive dilemmas, and in its stead, extremism is gaining ground. Here, the political radicalism of certain Latin American countries offers a warning to Americans. If voters can't get what they want through establishment politics, they'll look elsewhere. Whether in far-right candidates like in Chile, or in far-left candidates like in Peru, popular discontent favors extremists. If democracy can't deliver meaningful progress to voters' lives, then its chances of survival suffer terribly. I'm James Lewis, and that was this week's audio newsletter. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend.